start with a very difficult medrash, and we'll try to give a possible explanation to it. The medrash says the following, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, so he created it with a base, Bereishis. And the Aleph came and complained, it's not fair. I should be the one to start the Torah. Start creation. So the Rabbanu Shlom said to the Aleph, I'm sorry. And the Aleph said, and I have even a nice way of changing it, so I'll be first. Instead of Bereishis Bara Elohim, put Elohim Bara Bereishis, and the Aleph will be first. So the Rabbanu Shlom said, I'm sorry, but I can't start the Bria with an Aleph, because Aleph stands for Auror, curse, and I can't start with a curse. And Bay stands for Baruch, so I'd rather start with a blessing than a curse, so we'll start with a Bay. But don't worry, the Rabbanu Shlom told the Aleph, when I come to give the Torah, I'll start with an Aleph, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Aseres HaDibros. Very difficult medrash. If you can't start the world with an Aleph because it stands for curse, how can you start Matan Torah with an Aleph? Doesn't it stand for curse also? And obviously Aleph can be Anochi, it could be Elohim, it doesn't have to be Orer. And Beis, like a lot of words, Bizoyon, right, Busha, that are words with a Beis that aren't such nice words. So what's the medrash mean? I was thinking perhaps it means the following. The Rambam says that how do you reach Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem? A person wants to be a person who loves the Rabbanu Shalom, who fears the Rabbanu Shalom. How do you get there? So the Rambam in Mishneh Torah says the way to get there is by observing nature, learning about the wonders of nature, and understanding the vastness of the universe and the tremendous wisdom that went into creating every creation, from the largest, most complex creation to the smallest, most simple creation. And when a person does that, he has a tremendous love, a tremendous feeling of wanting to get close to the one who created all of this. And also, he has a feeling of fear and awe of how insignificant and small he is compared to the vast knowledge that is represented in creation. So the Rambam says the way to come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem is through an appreciation of nature. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvah, same Rambam, just different book, in Sefer HaMitzvah, where he describes the mitzvah of Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, the Rambam says, how do you get to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem? By learning Torah. As it says, V'yohavtos Hashem Elokecha, and right after that, V'hoyu hadvarim ho'eila shonochi mitzavcha ayom alavavecha. The way to come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem is by learning Torah. And the truth is that there is no contradiction between this, because really you need both of them. Let me explain why. The Rambam says that when a person learns and observes nature, and he sees the tremendous wisdom that went into creating the sun and the moon and the stars, right, and these all the other heavenly bodies, so he comes to a tremendous love and fear, awe of the Creator. The Torah says not like that. The Torah says, Upentiso einecho ashamayma, lest you look towards the heavens. V'ra'isa es hashemesh v'yasayoreach v'yasakochavim, you'll see the sun, the moon, and the stars. V'nidachto v'shtachavisalem, and you'll be pushed away and you'll worship them. You'll come to Avodah Zarah. So Torah says, by looking at the heavenly bodies, you're not going to come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. You're going to come to Avodah Zarah. So the Torah seems to contradict the Rambam. The Rambam says, by studying nature, you're going to come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. And the Torah says, we're afraid you're going to come to Avodah Zarah. What's the answer? No. Think. Balance. Huh? No, yeah. Balance, a better word. You need direction. Let me tell you two stories that happened way before you were born. But I remember them because I was a little bit younger than you. I was still in high school at the time, or junior high school. I was in junior high school. I must have been in 7th, 8th grade. And the first human being went into space. Okay? In a Sputnik, Yuri Gagarin was the first human being who went into space. He didn't go anywhere. He just orbited the Earth 3 times, got out of the gravitational pull of the Earth, was in outer space. The whole trip in outer space took 90 minutes. I remember listening to it on the radio at our break, middle of class, right, that the Russians, they didn't tell anybody beforehand because they were afraid that if it didn't work, they wouldn't say anything about it. But when it worked, they reported that they sent the first human being into space. And when he landed, okay, he came and dropped down into the sea. They came and got him. He got out of his Sputnik space craft, and he made the following idiotic statement. He said, "I'm sure now that there is no God." I didn't see him. Now, if he expected to see like an old guy on a throne floating up there in space, right, maybe that old guy on the throne was a few feet above him. He didn't exactly hit the ceiling. He just left the gravitational pull of the Earth. There was a lot of space above him, right? Millions and millions and billions of miles. So that was an idiotic thing to say. It probably was something that the Russian government told him he had to say. And that was it. There is no God. I didn't see him. That's what he got out of his tremendous experience of being the first human being in outer space. About 10 years later, America sent a few missions towards the moon. They weren't supposed to land on the moon, but they were supposed to set the pattern for eventual moon landings. And during one of those, I think Apollo missions, they took television pictures on the spot of the Earth from space. How the Earth looks like if you're standing on the Earth, you see the moon, how you would see the Earth standing on the moon looking back. But they were in outer space, and they took pictures, and they transmitted it by satellite all over the world. Everywhere in the world could see these pictures via television. Before they beamed the pictures back to Earth, of Earth seen from space, these Goyim, they were Goyim, they said, Tehillim Yutes, Hashamayim Misaprim Kvot Kael, Umaisa Yodov Magid HaRakia. They said that whole capital Tehillim, right, the heavens declare the work of Hashem, Shemayim Misaprim, the honor of Hashem, Umaisa Yodov Magid HaRakia. Tremendous Kiddush Hashem. There were a bunch of Goyim. But the Maisa, they said a Perek of Tehillim, and they said that from this you should be able to see the tremendous wisdom of the Ribbono Shel Olam. So here are two people, both Goyim, right? One, his experience in nature led him to Apikursus, to Kfira, and the other one led them to Emunah. What's the difference between them? What are you looking for? What's your perspective? If you're looking for the right, if you have the right perspective, you'll see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in nature. If you have the wrong perspective, you'll see Avodah Zarah in nature. So the truth is that you always need both of these paths. You need the path of Torah to first give you the right perspective. First you have to learn Torah. If you learn Torah, then you'll be able to see the world from the right, with the right lenses, with the right perspective. If you don't learn Torah, then there's always the danger that you'll get out of the world the wrong perspective. So therefore the Rambam says, there are two ways of reaching Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, and they are not exclusive, but they're both inclusive. You need both of them. You need the way of Torah. From Torah, the Torah guides you and makes you see the world the proper way. If you learn Torah, the Torah will give you the right perspective on the world. Once you have that right perspective, there's an inyan to look into the Bria and see the Ribbono Shel Olam that way too. Why? because in Torah you see it in a more abstract, theoretic way. When you look in the Bria, you see it concrete, real. There's another Medrash, a Gemara really. The Gemara says that what did Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah see that they were able to jump into the fiery furnace? What impressed them that gave them the power to jump into the fiery furnace of Nebuchadnezzar? So the Gemara says they made a kal v'chomer from the tzfardim, the frogs in Egypt. The frogs in Egypt went into the ovens to be mekadesh shem shamayim, right? When the plague of frogs came, so some frogs went into the places they were making bread, and some places went into their bedrooms and their dining rooms or whatever. But some frogs went into the places they were actually baking the bread. They jumped into the ovens. And those were the only frogs that survived. So Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah said, if frogs who don't get rewarded or punished can be mekadesh shem shamayim and jump into the oven, then we can do the same thing. So the obvious question is, the Torah says you're supposed to give your life for Kiddush Hashem. If somebody wants you to bow down to an idol, you have to give your life. What did they see in the frogs more than the halacha? But the halacha was abstract. When you see the frogs in nature, it makes more of an impression on you. We are human beings, we have five senses. What we sense with our senses makes more of an impression than what we know with our mind. Right? You can know something, but to really feel it, you have to be able to see it in reality. Okay, I'll give you an example between knowing something and really feeling it. And really feeling it means you can see it with your senses. You can experience it with your senses. Where's the example? So my Rosh Hashivas gave this following example. In America, in parks, they have green park benches. You ever see the green park benches? Every park has one color green. Somebody must have made a lot of money selling that green paint all over the world, all over the country. So someday you go into the park and you see a sign on the bench, wet paint. Okay? What is the normal reflex reaction of most people when they see that sign that says wet paint and they see the bench? What do?
Touch it.
And then look at their finger and they see the green paint on their finger and now they know that it's really wet paint. Why do you do that? You don't trust the sign? You see the paint is glistening. You didn't see the sign there yesterday, you see it today. So it's obviously wet paint. Why do you have to touch it? Because when you see the sign, you know it intellectually. But when you touch it, you feel it. It's real to you. Right? We said just now on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? Put your fear into all the things that you created. And then we say, we know all this. Says the Vilna Gaon, if you know it all, what are you asking for? So we know it, but we don't feel it. You can know something, but it's a difference between knowing it and actually feeling it. And therefore, it's important to be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world through the Torah, but that's more abstract. But if you see it in nature, you actually see it with your eyes, and you feel it with your senses, then it's more real to you. But first you have to have the Torah. Because if you don't learn Torah, then you won't have the right perspective on the world. And you may come to Avodah Zarah and to Kfirah from looking at the world, which many people do. But if you have the right perspective, the Torah gives you the right perspective, then it's important to look at the world also and to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world and to come to Avos Hashem and Yiras Hashem from experiencing the tremendous chokhmah of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the world itself. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam said the following: I can't create the world with an aleph, because aleph could be a curse. If you look at the world the wrong way, you could not only not come to see me, you could come to deny that I exist, like Yuri Gagarin. So I can't start the world with an aleph, because Aleph could be a curse. I have to start with a Beis. The Beis directs you to see the bracha in the world. You need direction. When it comes to creation, to Bereishis, you need to be guided. You need to be pointed specifically. What are you supposed to see? How are you supposed to see it? You can't leave it and even have a chance that maybe the Aleph will be an Orer. You need the Beis, which leads you to Baruch. However, the Torah itself has its own guidance system. The Torah, if you learn Torah properly, you'll be guided to see the world properly. So the Torah can start with an Aleph, and it won't be Orer, but it'll be Anochi Hashem Elokecha. So the Torah can start with an Aleph, because the Torah will guide you not to see the curse, but to see the Ribono Shel Olam. The world won't guide you. You need to be guided to how to see the world properly. Therefore, the world can't start with an Aleph. The world has to start with a Beis. Okay. Now, two things I think you can understand with this idea. Comes out, you always need two paths to come to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. First one is Torah, and the second is nature. And both are important. The Torah puts you on the right road, and then you can look at creation and nature properly, and nature gives you a real feeling of reality, not just the abstract intellectual understanding. Okay, everybody with me still? Now, I'll tell you where you see this every day in davening. Kriya Shema is the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. The Ahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha b'chol mildecha. Yeah. So Kriya Shema is the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. And there are two brachas that come before Kriya Shema, morning and evening. Okay, what's the first bracha? At the door in daytime? Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech Oseh Shalom Uvorei Sakol. What's the second bracha? So if you daven Ashkenaz, it's Ava Rabba. And if you daven Svar, it's Ava Solom. At night, there's a bracha, Asher Bidvaro Mariv Aravim, and the bracha of Ava Solom. Okay? What does the first bracha of Kriya Shema speak about? Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech. It's a long bracha. What is in there? Everything about nature. Kael Baruch Gedol Deya, Hechinu Fo'al Zohare Chama, Tov Yotzar Kavod Lishmo, Ma'oros Nasan, right? All the things about nature and the sun and the moon, and all about the angels, all about creations, about nature. So the first bracha is a bracha about nature. What's the second bracha predominantly speak about? Ava Solom or Ava Rabba? Ava Rabba of Tanu Hashem Elokeinu. Okay, Torah, mitzvos, chukim, mishpatim, the same belief, beinu, lahavinu, lahaskil. What you talk about? Learning Torah. In fact, if you didn't say Birchas HaTorah, right, and you said Ava Rabba, and you had intention to learn Torah right after that, you yod say the bracha Birchas HaTorah with Ava Rabba. Ava Rabba, it speaks about Torah. Okay. You want to get to Avas Hashem in Kriya Shema, there's two paths. You need both of them. You need the path of creation, of the Bria, and you need the path of Torah. So there's two brachas that precede Kriya Shema. One speaks about nature, and one speaks about Torah. Okay. Now, however, we said, even though nature came before the Torah, before we got the Torah, there was a world. So nature preceded the Torah, even though the Torah really preceded the world, but from our standpoint, the world was before the Torah. Before we got the Torah, we were in the world. So the bracha on nature comes first. But what letter does the bracha on nature start with? Huh? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. What's the first letter in the word Baruch? Beis. Excellent. The first one starts, and Ava Rabba and Ava Solom starts? And Aleph. You need two paths. The path of nature and the path of Torah. And nature may have preceded the Torah in time, but Torah always has to be the Aleph, and the Bria always has to be the Beis. If you don't start with Torah and get the right perspective, the Bria may have a bad effect on you, not a good effect. Another place you see this. The halacha is, most people don't do this. It's a minig that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, especially by Ashkenazim. In England they do it. In South Africa they do it. By Yekis they surely do it. And some other shuls too. Most shuls today don't do it. Except part of it. In the winter, now, between Mincha and Maariv on Shabbos, if you look in Sidurim, it's come out in every Siddur. You're supposed to say Borchi Nafshi. Borchi Nafshi is Tehillim Kuf Dalet. It speaks about nature. In the summer, at that same time of the Shabbos, between Mincha and Maariv, what do we learn? Pirkei Avos. And the cutoff points are Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Shuvah. We learn Pirkei Avos till Rosh Hashanah, and then Shabbos Shuvah, the Shabbos Shuvah drasha. There's no Pirkei Avos and there's no Borchi Nafshi. And after Sukkot, we start Borchi Nafshi. This Shabbos starts saying Borchi Nafshi. And then we go until Pesach, Shabbos HaGadol, again, drasha. And after Pesach, the first Shabbos after Pesach, we start with Pirkei Avos. Okay. Why? Why such a minig that in the winter we say Borchi Nafshi, in the summer we say Pirkei Avos? So I was thinking perhaps the idea is the following. Like we said, you always, in order to come to Avas Hashem, you need two paths, nature and Torah. And they have to go together. Torah first, and then nature. Okay. Shabbos is a time of love of Hashem. How do I know that? Because when a yontif falls on Shabbos, we add a word in Shemona Esrei, the Ahava. Right? The Ahava, Mikra Kodesh. Because Shabbos shows the Rabban Shem's love for Klal Yisrael. Shabbos is like our partner, right? And Shabbos is like a day in Olam Haba. So Shabbos is a day to reach Avas Hashem. The most intense part of Shabbos for reaching Avas Hashem is Shabbos Shuvah's time, Mincha time. It's called Rava de Ravin. It's the time of Ratzon Sheberatzon, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's desire for us and His love for us is the most intense of the whole week. Shabbos Mincha. So Shabbos Mincha, you want to reach Avas Hashem. What do you need to reach Avas Hashem? You need the path of Torah and the path of nature, both of them together. In the summer, okay, nature is in full bloom. So you have the path of nature. Just go outside and look. Right? Nature is blooming in the summer. But in the summer, the nights are very short. The main time for learning Torah is at night. And when the nights are short, the path of Torah is affected. It's minimized. So in the summer, we need to supplement the path of Torah in order to have both paths, the path of nature and the path of Torah. So in the summer, we learn Pirkei Avos, which mostly deals with the importance of learning Torah. So in the summer, we supplement the path of Torah because it's minimized because the nights are short, but we don't need to do anything about the path of nature because it's there. In the winter, it's just the opposite. The nights are very long, so there's plenty of time to learn Torah. But nature is hibernating. Everything is asleep in nature. The leaves fall off the trees and the animals go to sleep and you don't see nature in the winter. So if you want to reach Avas Hashem on Shabbos afternoon, the Torah Derech is there. But nature is not there. So what do? We say Borchi Nafshi, which speaks about nature. So in the winter we supplement the path of nature, which is minimized in the winter, right? And the path of Torah is there. And in the summer we do the opposite. We supplement the path of Torah because the path of nature is there, but the path of Torah is minimized. And like we said, the path of Torah is Avos, Aleph. And the path of nature is Borchi Nafshi, Beis. So the path of nature is always the Beis, and the path of Torah is always the Aleph. And therefore the Torah started with the Beis because the Brias HaOlam has to start with a Beis, because first of all it's secondary to the Torah, and secondly because you have to be pointed out the bracha, you have to be guided to see the bracha, otherwise you'll see a klala in nature. On the other hand, Torah could start with an aleph Because first of all, it's the first thing that you have to do to get the right perspective. And secondly, because the Torah itself will guide you to see properly. And there's no chance you're going to see the Aleph as Arur. You'll see the Aleph as Anochi Hashem Elokecha. That could be the meaning of the Medrash. The Rav Anshim said, creation, I can't start with an Aleph. Only with a Beis. But the Torah, I can start with an Aleph. Okay, any questions? Okay, we have some time, so let's go to something else. Familiar with the first Rashi in the Torah? Omer of Yitzchak, Lahoya Torah Lahashchil, Ela Me'achodesh Hazeh Lachem, Shei Mitzvah Rishona, Shenitztavu Bo Yisrael. Matam Posach Bebreishis. Okay, I want to speak up the question, because I don't understand the question. Rabbi Yitzchak says the proper place to start the Torah should have been from the first mitzvah, which is in Parshas Bo, Hachodesh Hazeh Lachem. And even though there are mitzvahs before that, Bris Milah and what's it called, Eiver Min Achai and other mitzvahs, but this is the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a people. The other mitzvahs are given to individuals, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and so on. But the first mitzvah the Jewish people got as a people in Mitzrayim was Hachodesh Hazeh Lachem. First mitzvah as a klal, as a nation, was, and that's what the Torah is given to Klal Yisrael, and it's a book of mitzvahs. So the obvious place to start with the first mitzvah. Why start with the story of creation? That's the question. I don't understand the question. Is the Torah just a book of mitzvahs? What's in the Torah? You're familiar with the Torah a little bit, yeah? Is it just a bunch of mitzvahs after Hachodesh Hazeh Lachem? Is one mitzvah after another just a list of mitzvahs? Like Sefer HaChinuch? What's in the Torah? Stories, too. Let's not call them stories. Cause narratives, what? Okay, you're one step ahead of me, so hold off. But you're right. But the Torah is a combination of mitzvahs, what to do, and stories. After Hachodesh Hazeh Lachem, there's a million stories about Yetzias Mitzrayim. In Vayikra, there's stories about Nodav and Avihu. Right? And in Bamidbar, there's plenty of stories. So the Torah is a mixture of stories and mitzvahs. Why does it make sense to Rabbi Yitzchak that the Torah should start with the first mitzvah? It makes just as much sense to me to start with the first story. Start from the beginning. In the beginning, Hashem created the world. Why is there a question, should have started with the first mitzvah? I don't know, it should have started with the first story. If the Torah would just be a book of mitzvahs, fine. Then start with the first mitzvah. But it's a book of mitzvahs and stories. Start with the first story. What's the problem? Now the answer is the following, I think. Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky explains the second to the last pasuk in Megillas Esther in the following way. The pasuk says like this: V'chol ma'asei sakpo u'gvuroso u'poroshas gedulas Mordechai alohein kisuvim al sefer divrei hayomim l'malchei modai u'poroso. All the strength and greatness of Mordechai and a lot of the things that he did in his life are written in the history books of the kings of Modai and Poros. Says Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky, why do I need a Mara Makom? Right, for further information about this topic, you can look into the history books of the kings of Modai and Poros. First of all, did anybody ever have access to these books? They weren't in the library. They were the king's private books. Nobody ever went and knocked on the king's palace and said, can I see your books? Because it says in my Megillas Esther that if I want more information, I should look in your history books. What was the purpose of it? Says Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky, the purpose is the following. The Megillah is telling me, if you're looking for history of this period, this is the wrong place to look for it, not Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther is a very poor history book, because it records some things from the first year of Ahasuerus, the third year, the fifth year, the seventh year, right? It doesn't give me a full picture of the history of the time. It just picks out those events that were important for me to understand, to recognize the nace that happened, and that the Rabban Shom was involved. That's all. Here you'll learn Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. You're not going to learn history. The purpose of Torah is to teach you how to get closer to Hashem. Ava and Yira. And if it doesn't teach you Ava and Yira, it's not in the Torah. There are no stamped stories, history, scientific facts in the Torah. There are other books. The Torah gives you mitzvahs. Some of the mitzvahs, the Zohar says, are open, and some are clothed in stories. In fact, when the Torah speaks about all the different parts of Torah, Torah, mitzvahs, chukim, mishpatim, Torah means a specific part of the Torah. You know which part of the Torah it refers to? It can't refer to mitzvahs or chukim or mishpatim, because those are mentioned. Torah refers to the story part of the Torah, says the Ramban. But Torah means horah, to teach. It's supposed to teach you. So the story part is just stories. The answer is no. It teaches you also. We're supposed to learn mitzvahs, midos tovos, whatever it may be, from every single story in the Torah. So there's only mitzvahs in the Torah. Right? The Torah doesn't have anything there just because it's interesting information. It's there to teach you something. If you don't know what it teaches you, it's your problem. But if you learn it deeper, more properly, you'd see what it comes to teach you. This is the mistake that Menashe HaMelech made. Menashe HaMelech, it says, was Megala Panim Batorah Shelo Kalocha. He said drushes in the Torah that were totally off base. One of them, the Gemara gives an example. He said, didn't Moshe Rabbeinu have anything better to write in the Torah than Timna Haisa Pilegesh Lelifas Ben Esav? Timna was a concubine to Elifas Ben Esav. Who cares? Right? Why do I need to know that? What's that going to help my life that I should know that Timna? It's a nice, interesting historical fact. But who cares? Chacham came along and they said, no. It's not just a stam historical fact. We learned something from that that brings us closer to Hashem. Timna was a princess. She could have married royalty. And she wanted to join the family of Avraham Avinu, because she realized this was really something special. More special than any being a princess or a queen or a king. So she came to convert in the time of Avraham when she was a younger woman. And Avraham pushed her away with both hands. He refused. He rejected her. She came a little bit later when she was a middle-aged woman to Yitzchak, and he rejected her. She came later on when she was an older woman to Yaakov, and he rejected her. She said, if I can't get into this family through the front door, I'm going to come through the back door. So she became a Pelegesh, not a regular wife, a Pelegesh to Eliphaz ben Esav. Now she finally got into the family of Avraham Avinu, into the black sheep part of the family, but she's in the family. You know who her son was? Who the son of Timna and Eliphaz was? Amalek. And the rabbis say that we should learn from here something, first of all, that you should never reject somebody completely. Never push them away with both hands. You push away with the left hand, and you bring close with the right hand. They should not have rejected this woman completely. They should have found some way of being makarif for a little bit at least. Because since they pushed her away completely, eventually Amalek came, and we have such problems with Amalek because of that. So that's first thing we learn. Second thing we learn from that is, this woman was a queen, a princess. And she saw that being a part of the family of Avraham Avinu was superior to that. It should teach you the greatness of Avraham Avinu. And Avraham Avinu teaches us the greatness of Hashem. So this seemingly unimportant tidbit of knowledge really is there to teach me a mitzvah, to teach me how to get closer to the Rabban Shalom. There's nothing in the Torah. The Pirkei Avos, Perek Hei, starts off the following way. Ba'asara mamaros nivra ha'olam. The world was created with 10 mamaros. The kol kach lama, why so many? Ba'alo b'maimer echad yachli baros. It could have been created with one maimer. Comes to tell me that the world is an important place. It was created with 10 mamaros, very important. Everything individually is important, and it gives more reward to the people who preserve the world, the tzaddikim, and it gives punishment to the people who destroy the world, the rishoyim. I don't understand the question. It says that God created the world with 10 mamaros. He could have done it with one. What do you mean he could have done it with one? How do I know? How did the Tana know that God could have done it with one? And don't tell me because God can do anything. That's true. But maybe the way to create the world is by 10 mamaros. I don't know. I don't create worlds. Maybe you need... Can you ask a question? How come God created hands with 5 fingers? He couldn't have created hands with 1 finger? Sure, he could have. But he knew that 5 fingers are ideal. Could have created hands with 20 fingers. But you know what? Five fingers, or you have 20 fingers, too many. Right? This way you can play the piano, you have five fingers. So the Rav Amram knew that the ideal amount of fingers was five. So you can't ask a question, well, why did God create five fingers? He could have had 10, could have made 20, could have made 3. He could have done anything he wanted, but obviously he knew that five was the proper number. So the Rav Amram could have created the world with one mimer, but he knew that the way to create worlds is with 10. What's the question? So if you look in Avestra of Nosson, Avestra of Nosson is the Brises. It's the Mishnah is what Rabbi Yehuda Anasi chose to be the version of Torah Shebaal Peh that we have. But there were other versions, and many of them were more verbose, and sometimes they shed light on the Mishnah. The Mishnah that was very, very concise. In the Avos Rav Nosson, which is a longer version of Pirkei Avos, it says there a little bit different question. It says like this, Basora Mamoros Nivra Olam, V'chimat Tzorech Leboi Olam V'kach. Why do we need to know that? Not that, how come God couldn't create the world with one mimer? We're not asking a question on God. We don't know why God wanted 10, not 1. That's his business. Why do we need to know it was 10? That's the question. Who cares? For all I care, it could be 1. I'm not going to go create worlds. This is a do-it-yourself. In case you want to create a world, use 10 mamoros. Right? What do I need to know this for? I'm not creating worlds. I came into the world. Why did the Torah tell me that God created the world with 10 mamoros? For all I care, it could have been 1. That's the question. What do you mean? It's an interesting fact. If you have a trivia contest and somebody says, how many mamoros were the world created, you'll know it's 10. It's an interesting piece of information. But the Torah doesn't give you interesting pieces of information. It only gives you things that bring you closer to Hashem. And if there wouldn't be something we could learn from that, that brings us close to Hashem, it wouldn't be there. It would be in a science book. It would be in a history book. It wouldn't be in the Torah. Whatever is in the Torah is either a mitzvah or it is a mitzvah clothed in a story. But ultimately it's all mitzvahs. And therefore, Rashi brings up Yitzchak's question. If that's the case, if the Torah really is all mitzvahs, except some of the mitzvahs are open, and some are clothed in stories. So where's the most logical place to start? Not with the first story. I'll tell you why. There's a rule in creative writing. If you're ever going to write a book, okay, remember this rule. One rule in creative writing is that when you start the book in the first few paragraphs, you let the reader know what the purpose of the book is. What's this book about? Is it a science book, a history book, a novel, fiction, non-fiction? They should be able within the first paragraph or two to get a feel of what the book is all about. The beginning of the book sets the pattern for what the book is all about. If the Torah is totally a book of mitzvahs, except some mitzvahs are clothed in stories, so you know where the Torah should have started? With the first obvious mitzvah. First mitzvah given to Klal. Now I know this is a book of mitzvahs. So the next time I see a story, I know to understand it as somehow there's a mitzvah hiding behind the story. Because the beginning of the book is mitzvahs, that sets the pattern that this book is a book of mitzvahs. But if I start with what appears to be a story, I may make a mistake and think it's only a story. I didn't yet establish what the purpose of this book is. So maybe it's only a story. Maybe it's not something supposed to teach me anything, just interesting. So the obvious place to start, that's what Rabbi Yitzchak said. The Torah, which is a book of mitzvahs, either stories in the Torah, but those stories are there to teach me. They're Torah, they're Horah. They're not there just to give me interesting information. They're there to make an impact on my life somehow, to teach me something that will bring me close to Hashem. So the Torah is all mitzvahs, except some mitzvahs are portrayed as mitzvahs and some as stories. But the stories are also mitzvahs. So the most logical place to start is with the first mitzvah, and that sets the tone. And then if you have a story after that, you know to put it in the perspective of mitzvahs. But if you start with what appears to be a story, you're running into trouble. So what's the answer? We have no time to go into the answer, but I'm going to give you just one interesting point. The Torah did not start from Bereishis. Torah started from the first mitzvah. beginning of the Torah is HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. I'll prove it to you from Rashi. Listen how Rashi phrases the question. Lo Hoya HaTorah LaHaschil Ela MeHaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. What word does Rashi use for beginning? LaHaschil. Okay? And then Rashi says, Umatam Posach Bebracious. He should have said, Umatam Hischil Bebracious. Why did he change the word? The answer, I think, is the Torah really starts from HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. But when you have a book, sometimes the first page of the book is not the first page. Page number one comes like sometimes 30 pages after the beginning of the book. What comes before page number one? The preface, introduction. And that's Roman numeral 1, 2, 3, right? So the Torah has a Pesach, a Psicha, a preface. Bereishis till HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem is not the beginning of the Torah. It's the preface to the Torah. It's the introduction. The Torah starts with HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. That's the first mitzvah. But the introduction to the Torah, you need an introduction, a preface, that's Bereishis till HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. Why do you need a preface? That's a whole other shiur, and someday maybe we'll speak about it. Yeah. Right, 100%. But because there's a danger that if you see a story, you may just understand it as a story and not look beyond it to see, well, what am I supposed to learn from this? Right? Therefore, the Torah should have started with the first obvious mitzvah, set the pattern, this is a mitzvah book. Now, when you get a story, you'll look into it. But if you start with what appears to be a story and you don't know what the Torah is all about, then you'll think it's not a story.
So it's the story of the relationship. So that's why
Enochinami, the beginning of the Torah is HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, Rosh Chodoshim. That's really the beginning. Except before you can get to that first mitzvah, you need an introduction. Why you need an introduction is a different shiur. But you need an introduction. Okay? If you want to see the answer in print, right, there's a book called Outlooks and Insights that speaks about the answer, right? And I stole it from there, except I wrote the book, so I'm allowed to steal from there. Okay. If you want to look it up in there, I think they probably have in the library here or somewhere.